This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Boston's brand new mayor, Marty Walsh, has put confronting urban violence at the top of his agenda. Although the murder rate has been dropping for the past 4 years, there were 40 killings last year in Boston. Most of them were concentrated in the same parts of the city, in parts of Dorchester, Roxbury, and Mattapan.
Walsh says that while 40 homicides are fewer than the year before, they still represent, in his words, 40 grieving mothers too many. So he issued this call to action.
We know what works. We know there are steps we can take now. We must redouble our efforts and recommit ourselves to the safety of every citizen in our city. We will do that today and every day I am mayor of this city.
In his first official meeting as mayor yesterday, Walsh brought together the mothers of children killed by violence, members of the law enforcement community, clergy, and others to talk about how to stop the killing.
Three of those who participated in that meeting are with us now. They've all been involved in this challenge for many years and paid a heavy price for the violence in this city. Mona Lisa Smith is the president and CEO of Mothers for Justice and Equality in Roxbury. Her 18-year-old nephew was gunned down in 2010. And Mona Lisa, thank you so much for coming in. Mona Lisa, thank you.
Thank you for
good,
having me.
Good to have you. Also with us is Kim Odom. She's a field director for Operation Lipstick, which we'll talk about in a moment. Her 13-year-old son, Stephen, was shot and killed in Dorchester in 2007. And Kim Odom, thank you very much for coming
in. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. And last but certainly not least, the Reverend Jeffrey Brown. He's the former executive director of the Boston 10-Point Coalition. Welcome back to the program, Reverend Brown.
It's
good to see you. Listeners, this is the most vexing challenge facing American cities, how to save the lives of its children. Boston has a reputation for good work in this area, but clearly the work is not complete. With a new mayor and a new pledge to stop the violence, what has to happen? What works? What doesn't? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. I'd like to start by asking each of you what it meant to have Marty Walsh taking on this issue in his first official meeting as mayor. You were all there yesterday. What happened? Why was it important? And Kim Odom, let me start with you.
It meant certainly a lot because it's something that we have been facing for quite some time in our city, and me being somewhat newly inducted in a sense into this unfortunate journey. I'm 6 years in. My son Stephen was murdered October 4th, 2007. While walking home from playing basketball with neighborhood friends. Mm-hmm. And I can remember in the aftermath of that being quite hurt and devastated and wanting to understand the root cause of what was going on in our community, because I knew that this was an unfortunate pattern, but never did I imagine that it was so close to home, that it would hit home in a very real way. And so what Mayor Walsh did on yesterday was quite important. And in the aftermath of Stephen's death, I have vowed that his life does not end on the sidewalk and his death would not be in vain, and was determined to be at the table, whatever that table was, to be a part of the solution to add value.
Well, we want to talk about some of the solutions, but I'd love to come over to you, Mona Lisa Smith, and sort of get the same question to you, you know, what it meant.
The work that I'm doing with mothers who have lost children to violence, empowering them to be the change agents in their communities, in their homes, really came from really watching my niece lose her only son. And I really wanted to help her to have a voice and really demonstrate that his life matters. And it didn't just matter to her or to me, but it matters to a whole lot of people. So I believe what our new mayor mayor did was he sent a message to all of those mothers, all of those families, that your children's lives do matter and that we are going to not just have their deaths or life in vain, but we are going to take their memories and we're going to save other lives and we're going to empower the people to be the change agents in their community because government can't do it alone. You know, the people, this has to be an act of the people in order for us to really see this change that we need to see happen.
Mm. And Reverend Jeffrey Brown, you've been involved in this for 20 years. We just heard two voices there that have really been affected by the violence in the city. Two important voices. What did it mean to you to have a mayor who sort of put this front and center in his first official meeting?
Yeah. I mean, I remember getting the call over the weekend and them saying that the meeting is going to happen Monday afternoon. And I said, isn't the inauguration also on Monday? And so at 10 o'clock, he's being inaugurated at Boston College. And at 2 o'clock, we arrive at the office. And I found out that the staff had gotten there just about an hour before. So, I mean, the boxes weren't even unpacked yet. And his desire was to have this meeting and to begin listening and bringing everybody together to try to really figure out a way to restart the collaborations and all of the partnerships, you know, that we've had, and to really listen to try to find the creative solutions, you know, for the violence. The Mothers for Justice and Equality have demonstrated time and again the importance of coming together as a city and creatively finding the solution, not just city, but the community.
You know about this as well as anyone. Hasn't Boston been doing this relatively well over the years? I mean, there was talk years ago of the Boston miracle, and yet this problem persists. What more needs to happen? And I'll come back to you, Reverend Brown.
I think, you know, for me, there have been a lot of different factors that have contributed to that. I mean, of course, the economy and what's occurred over the past several years and have dried up a lot of the resources that we've been able to tap in the past. But there have been a proliferation of community groups that have grown over the years trying to tackle this problem at a volunteer basis. And there has been a kind of waning of a lot of the partnerships and collaborations that we've had over the years, something that our new mayor sees as a priority.
And when you're talking about collaborations and partnerships, are you talking about partnerships between people like you, people like Monalisa Smith and Kim Odom and the local police, these kinds of partnerships?
Those kinds of partnerships. Yeah. I mean, you know, the police can't do it alone. I mean, we know this. We know that the DA's office can't, you know, prosecute enough. And, of course, you know, the jails can't fill, these jails. And so in order for a solution to be done. So we know that there has to be an engagement with the community in order for us to see a lasting, sustainable reduction in violence so that the era of violence can end. I mean, I think the persistent problem is the dominance of violence within our community. So it's the mentality and the trauma that comes as a result of homicides occurring in neighborhoods. Mm. It is the lack of collaboration or, you know, cities that will look at a more police heavy solution. I mean, we have to find ways in which we also address the ethos part of this equation where we can bring the community together in a powerful way.
Listeners, we're talking about this continuing vexing challenge that faces Boston and most American cities, how to stop the violence. We have a mayor who has put it as sort of job one on his agenda. What do you think he needs to do? What does the city need to do? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Kim Odom, I'll come back to you. I'd love you to pick up on what Jeffrey Brown was talking about there. He was talking about sort of degradation or a sort of disappearance of some of those productive collaborations that we once had. I'm wondering what your perspective on that is.
Well, it's true that there, I suppose, has been a disappearance of some of those organizations that were, but in that disappearance, there have been those that have also risen. to the occasion as well. Mothers for Justice and Equality is an example of that. I'm also a member of Mothers for Justice and Equality. There are some longstanding organizations that are still in the fight. Lewis D. Brown Peace Institute. Tina Cherry is the founder of that. And an organization that I'm now working with as well called Citizens for Safety. And we're working with this prevention program called Lipstick, Ladies Involved in Putting a Stop to Inner City Killing. So there are those organizations that, as Mona Lisa expressed, who recognize how important it is to even though it has been said that the money's kind of dried up, that still we can't allow that to dictate how we're to dictate that we will allow the money's not being there to still address the urgency of now and the fact that our children's lives matter, and we need to we need to make sure that we don't allow ourselves to forget that, you know, that what seems to become the norm, mm-hmm. like we've seemingly become accepting of what has happened, that we have to get away from, you know, this is not the norm, and address those issues like gun violence being a prevalent issue in the community. The organization, the Operation Lipstick, addresses the gun trafficking.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you specifically about Operation Lipstick. This is an effort to dissuade young women in the community, right, from harboring guns and making the gun trafficking more possible. Is that right?
Exactly. So it's to address that, you know, that mindset of women of all ages who are at that age where they're influenced, unfortunately, by sometimes their boyfriends or husbands, whoever the case may be, but those who are not able to get guns illegally. So it's about the straw purchasing piece, mm-hmm. but it's also about holding and hiding guns, and to, you know, address this in a way where we're talking about the consequences. You know, sometimes we say, well, people should know better. Well, it's, you know, we think people should know better, and yeah, they should, but we do also realize that even when you say people should know better, there are other factors
sure.
that come into play where you still have to, you know, you still have to raise that awareness and teach people about consequences, both on the legal side, and raise that moral consciousness as well, to say, you know, you know, consider that you're helping someone hide this or helping someone buy this is at the end of that contributing to the harm or ultimate death of someone, perhaps your own family member. And how would that make you feel?
I want to raise this issue. You know, Mayor Walsh referenced the fact that there were 40 homicides in Boston last year. It represents a decrease. But as he said, 40 homicides means 40 grieving mothers too many. I thought that was pretty powerful language. But I'm wondering, there is a concern. You know, you can talk to some people in this city, even prominent people who study the problem, and sort of say, well, wait a minute, 40 homicides, we're doing pretty well given where we were. So this is a tough question to ask family members who have lost people to violence. But Mona Lisa Smith, let me come to you and sort of ask you how you push back against what might be almost a sense of, I don't know, apathy about this problem.
Mm. I think the mayor said it best. I mean, he said 40, you know, murders is 40 family members that are grieving the loss of a loved one.
Sure.
But if we look at it from the, you know, from ourselves as a city, as a community, you know, 40 homicides is too many. You know, that shows that we don't have, you know, total safety. And we need to take it a step beyond that. And we need to look at geographically, where were those homicides?
Were they clustered
in one, you know, community? So if it was 40 homicides that happened in a 1.5 mile radius, how effective were we and working to protect those people? You know, so I just think that it's bigger than just, you know, putting a number or a statistic out there. We're talking about a whole community and population of people that are living in a state of trauma every single day. So you may have a number of 40, but multiply that times 100, mm-hmm. or how many people that make up that community, mm-hmm. or how many people that individual touched in one day. Did they go to a school? Did they have a job? Mm. You know, how many people were impacted by that violence?
I want to, you mentioned the word trauma, and trauma services for victims of violence is something that's very important to people who have lived through it. And here's what the mayor said about that yesterday.
Imagine if these kids, these parents, had people to help them in times of trauma. Healthcare professionals, community members serving as volunteers, answering the call whenever a life and with it a family and a neighborhood is torn by violent crime.
So Mona Lisa, let me come back to you. Imagine if these kids had this kind of help in times of trauma. How important is that, and are the trauma services out there?
I think we lack the resources that we need to deal with the level of trauma that we are facing every single day. Yes, there are trauma services out there, mm-hmm. but are they adequate to serve the enormity of the problem that we are facing as a community? No. And I don't believe anybody can argue that point. We have children who attend more funerals than they attend graduations. Mm. Those children go into school every single day. Are teachers equipped to handle that level of trauma? What happens to that trauma? That trauma begins to multiply and it begins to turn into more severe mental health issues. What happens to those individuals, those young people? Are the schools tolerant of their behavior? No, they begin to filter into our juvenile justice system. What happens to them when they enter into that cycle? They enter into the prisons. Are the prisons dealing with the mental health system? No. Then what happens to them? They come back to us. Mm. They come back to our communities, and it perpetuates the violence that we have. It's a cycle that begins with unaddressed trauma. And if we would put more trauma resources into our communities to support the families that are being impacted by that, then maybe we won't have 40 murders to talk about. Maybe we will have zero tolerance for these murders. But we have to face the fact and not sway away from the word, which is trauma.
I want to take a couple of calls. We've got some callers standing by. I'd love to get in this conversation. Let's go to Bruner from Hyde Park. On line one.
It's Brunier.
Brunier, I'm so sorry about that. Brunier, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you very much. Well, that's an issue that's very close to me because I was born in Haiti and I came here when I was very young. I grew up in Matapan. When I tell people I grew up in Matapan, I went to college and I did everything that I was supposed to do. I've never been to jail or anything like that. Never tried pot. People say, what happened? I said, because I was raised at home. The notion that somebody is raised in the street is something that we allow to fester as it's a normal thing. I think that there are ways to raise a child that's going to prevent all those things, but we're not focusing on that. We're focusing on after the violence has happened, after a child has killed someone. That's what we focus on. I think we need to focus like a laser beam on how our children raised. The fact that the society itself prevents parents from being empowered to raise their kids as they see best, I think that's the root cause of the problem.
Well, Brunier, let me put your point here on the table. Reverend Brown, I mean, Brunier seems to be talking about this almost as, I don't know, a cultural issue as opposed to a problem that government needs to get involved with in a big way.
Well, it's both. I mean, we have an issue where the city has to respond, but it also behooves us to understand that the community has to respond to this also. But it's, you know, I mean, it's not as simple as a solution as, you know, people have to raise their children. I mean, there are so many factors that are out there that are contributing to this. Trauma being one huge factor. I mean, as a pastor who has done many of the funerals that have occurred in the city of Boston, when you see young people coming to funeral after funeral after funeral, you get an idea of the outside factors that are impacting, you know, a home. And so I understand the caller's opinion about this, but it's a little more complex.
Sure, a little more complex. I mean, more complex indeed. I mean, one of the issues that would certainly come to mind is We have a growing economic disparity in this city. I mean, issues of poverty certainly address this problem as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, when we are talking about the structural issues, we are talking about poverty. We are talking about the educational system and, you know, and how it's structured today. We are talking about failed housing policies, you know, over the years. But that has fomented a cultural phenomenon where violence is celebrated and violence is accepted, or there are coping mechanisms, as Mona Lisa alluded to, that are constructed by families and not by professionals that help to perpetuate.
I want to just bring it back to the new mayor, Mayor Walsh, and Kim Odom and Mona Lisa Smith. I'll give you a chance to sort of answer this finally. You know, the sense that I get is he talks about this issue from a personal perspective. I mean, he had a time in his life when he ran with a rough crowd. He was actually shot. He's also a recovering alcoholic. Yesterday, he talked about the hard road back from drugs and alcohol abuse and how such abuse contributes to violence and crime. Did both of you get a sense that his personal experience could lead to maybe a personal resolve to stay focused on this issue? You're nodding your head, Mona Lisa.
I think he's had a life that definitely warrants us all celebrating that he made it through. But you know what? I'm every day I'm dealing with families, with young people who are facing challenges that that are just unimaginable. Mm-hmm. So, I salute him and I celebrate him, but you know what? I really need to see a workable plan that the community can measure results and that we can celebrate that we no longer have murders. So I'm all for,
sure,
our new mayor.
Kim Odom, literally 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. I'd like to give you a sense to just express, are you optimistic about things improving as we go forward?
I'm definitely optimistic. You know, every now and then I might get a little frustrated, but never giving up, always hopeful, always encouraged. I do believe it. The mayor's experience has helped him to see the need and the urgency, and I'm encouraged.
All right. That's Kim Odom, Field Director for Citizens for Safety Operation Lipstick Program. Also the Reverend Jeffrey Brown, former Executive Director of Boston's 10-Point Coalition, and Mona Lisa Smith, President and CEO of the Roxbury-based organization Mothers for Justice and Equality. Thank you all very much. Important conversation that we will continue.
Thank you.
Listeners, stay with us. Much more to come. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks with Sasha Pfeiffer.